Good afternoon and welcome to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Touro Law Center in Central Islip. And every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today on the docket, we're talking about prisons and policing. Today we're joined by Professor Richard Klein and Amal Sinha to help us better understand the issues regarding incarceration on Long Island. Richard Klein received his bachelor's with honors from the University of Wisconsin, his master's and doctoral degrees in international affairs from Columbia University, and his law degree from Harvard Law School. Professor Klein served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Somalia and worked for 10 years as a trial attorney with the Criminal Defense Division of the Legal Aid Society. He's taught international human rights law in China, India, Russia, and Israel, and has a long list of scholarly publications. Professor Klein has also received numerous awards from students in appreciation of his teaching, and he's active with several committees of the criminal justice sections of both the American Bar Association and the American Association of Law Schools. Touro Law Center is certainly lucky to have him on our faculty as a professor in criminal law and international human rights. Thank you for joining us today, Professor Klein.
My pleasure.
And also with us on air today is Amal Sinha, who's the chapter director of the New York Civil Liberties Union. Amal is an experienced public interest lawyer and advocate with expertise in civil rights, civil liberties, nonprofit management, and legislative and policy advocacy. He also has designed and taught two media law classes as an adjunct professor at Marymount Manhattan College. Additionally, he's the vice president of public interest for the South Asian Bar Association of New York, through which he's cultivated a community of public interest attorneys, developed continuing legal education programs, and advocated on behalf of South Asian communities in New York. Welcome to the show, Amal.
Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with you, Professor Klein. Can you tell us about the incarceration rate in the United States in recent years?
Well, the incarceration rate has skyrocketed in the last 30 years, in the last 40 years especially. In 1970, there were 400,000 prisoners in both state and federal facilities in the U.S. That number had gone up to about 2.3 million by 2012. And just in the last 30 years, there's been a fivefold increase. That said, in the last 2 years, at the state level, there's been some decline in the number of newly incarcerated individuals. And there are a number of reasons for that, which I could go into later if you'd wish.
Yeah, well, that is really an exponential increase from 400,000 to $2.3 million people, which is costing the government a tremendous amount of money, whether or not it's actually doing any good, which I want to come back and talk about as well. But just to set this in context, 2.3 million people incarcerated in the United States, how does this compare with the rest of the world?
Well, we're way over. Our rate is way over that of the rest of the world. We have about 5% of the population of the world, yet 25% of all of those who are imprisoned in American jails or prisons. Our rate is 6 times that of the average of all countries in the world. And I think there are two reasons for that, both because we have more crimes that we incarcerate people for. We have what people call over-criminalization in America compared to the rest of the world. And secondly, our prison sentences are longer than they tend to be in most other countries in the world as well.
And so maybe we'll come back and talk about some examples of over-criminalization. But first, just to set this also in the context of Long Island, Amal, what do you see as some of the issues regarding incarceration in Suffolk County? How are our rates here?
Well, I think Suffolk serves as a microcosm of the problem that Professor Klein just have. We have, like everywhere else across the country, an over-incarceration problem. We jail people at a very high rate, and often people sit in jail for nonviolent offenses or misdemeanors, or because they simply can't afford bail. In fact, the vast majority of the people in the Suffolk County jails aren't convicted of the crime they're accused for and are simply awaiting trial because they can't afford the bail they've been assigned. Yet we're continuing to build a new facility in Yapa, spending hundreds of millions of dollars to We also have a lawsuit regarding conditions of confinement in South Lake Jails right now, the NYPLU suing the county for terrible, inhumane sanitary conditions. We're representing hundreds of current and former incarcerated individuals who have suffered, been waves running through the cells, exploding toilets, mold and mildew, rat and rodent infestations while incarcerated. And we're calling for the county to fix these conditions, make the jail comply with really, really basic notions of humanity.
Wow. Unbelievable. Richard, can you talk about some of the problems that overcrowding of the prisons is creating?
Yeah, what I'm always just referring to as far as Suffolk County building new prisons is not the typical way that most states and counties are dealing with over-criminalization and with the incarceration of so many people. California, for instance, had such overcrowding in its facilities that ultimately the Supreme Court found that the prison conditions in California constituted cruel and unusual punishment and ordered California either to build more jails or to release nonviolent offenders. So California has passed the Public Safety Realignment Act, which in fact now has released those who were in prison for nonviolent, non-serious, and non-sex offenders. So there are ways of dealing with the fact that there are so many people who are incarcerated that either more jails are needed, or perhaps we should take a look at just who we are incarcerating, and is it absolutely necessary to incarcerate at the rate that we have been in the past?
So when you you talk about the nonviolent offenses and you talk about over-criminalization, what crimes, based on data, do you think most of those who are incarcerated have committed?
Right. We're talking about drug offenses. At the federal level, half of those incarcerated are there for a drug conviction. And I think that states have increasingly seen that we can deal with drug problems in ways other than just putting people in jail. It both saves money in the short term and the long term, as well as then we don't end up taking people from the streets, incarcerating them, labeling them felons, and then making it all the harder once they do get out of jail to lead a kind of productive working life.
Right. So, you know, you mentioned the drug crimes. There's a big difference between those that are incarcerated because they've been drug dealers versus those who were drug users.
Absolutely. I think we tend to incarcerate those who were caught with drugs as well as those who are caught actually selling drugs. And I think the hope is that if people are arrested who are possessing of drugs, maybe they will tell the cops some big-time dealer that they get the drugs from, but that isn't the way it really works. Those who are incarcerated for drug sales tend very often to be just addicts who are engaging in low-level sales in order to support their habit.
So do you think in those states that are starting to legalize marijuana, not just for medicinal purposes, is that going to help with the incarceration rates in those states?
Absolutely. And not just in those states, but even states in addition to Colorado and Washington, states are starting to look at, should we criminalize to the extent that we have mere possession of marijuana? So even though it's not actually becoming decriminalized in a lot of states, there's certainly less incarceration of people for marijuana offenses. And we've seen the Brooklyn DA, for instance, come out in the last weeks stating that his office wasn't going to prosecute first-time offenders for marijuana possession, even though that crime itself is still on the books.
And I just wanted to shift briefly to other demographics. So in addition to the crimes that people have been convicted of, are any truth to the fact that what people talk about, minorities being imprisoned at a higher rate than others?
I think as of the last year, we have U.S. Justice Department statistics for 2012, 60% of all those who are incarcerated are people of color, black or Hispanic. And if we look at particular states, for instance, if we look at New Jersey, for example, where only 15% of the population is black, over 60% of those who are incarcerated are, in fact, black. So the impact of our incarcerating people certainly hits the minority community to a great, great extent.
Yeah, and the statistics certainly don't sound right with 15% of the population, yet 60% of the incarceration rate.
Right.
So I want to thank you, Professor Klein and Amol Sinha. Please stay with us because coming up, we'll continue our discussion on policing and talk more about the work of the New York Civil Liberties Union. You're listening to On the Docket with Torah Law Dean Patricia Salkin on Long Island News 103.9. Welcome back to On the Docket. I'm here with Professor Richard Klein and Amol Sinha. And before the break, we were discussing the statistics of incarceration throughout the country and more specifically here in Suffolk County. Amol, can you talk about some of the ongoing policing issues that we're facing here in Suffolk?
Sure. So the Suffolk County Police Department has historically had some serious issues, including the erosion of trust between Latino immigrants and the police, the targeting of racial minorities for harassment or abuse, brutality issues, and more recently, an uptick in the use of tasers, which has led to people being severely injured or killed. However, the bigger concern here is that there's a serious lack of oversight and accountability in the police department. There's no independent oversight mechanism in Suffolk, essentially nothing that can look at the policies, procedures, and practices of the police department and determine whether the police are abiding by constitutional standards or utilizing scarce county resources in effective ways.
So in the city of New York, the city of Albany, the city of Schenectady, in Ithaca, in some Westchester County communities, there are police oversight boards. How come there's nothing on Long Island?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. I think there's a lot of merit to the fact that there's no political will here for it. And it's the responsibility of advocates and of lawyers and the criminal justice bar to come together and demand for some sort of independent oversight. And I think we are, you know, working towards that goal. But, you know, without it, it leads to some terrible circumstances, which I think we'll get into in a little bit.
Yeah, and actually around the country, there's a growing movement, I believe, in citizen oversight of law enforcement with a national organization that has hundreds of representatives from communities across the country gathering annually with the police departments and with public officials to talk about these issues of trust and to talk about policy issues. But let's use that as a segue for you to explain to our listeners about the kinds of criminal justice work that the New York Civil Liberties Union is involved with.
Sure. You know, statewide, the New York Civil Liberties Union is involved in a tremendous amount of work trying to reform the criminal justice system. We have a major statewide lawsuit, which also implicates Suffolk County, which is named as a defendant. We're trying to reform the indigent defense system in New York to ensure that individuals who are charged with a crime and are assigned an attorney because they can't afford one on their own, that they receive adequate and effective counsel. We've heard stories from across the state where people are routinely denied counsel in some upstate counties, or people are assigned counsel but don't talk to them for weeks or months and sit in jail awaiting trial simply because the attorney doesn't have the time to come in and visit with their client, because these attorneys, these legal aid attorneys and public defenders, are so overworked and under-resourced that they might have up to 1,000 open cases at any given time and not be able to effectively represent any one client.
So,
in addition to that, we're involved in marijuana reform work. As I mentioned earlier, jail conditions and prison reform work. We're involved in a number of policing issues, including the stop and frisk reforms in New York City and brutality issues throughout the state. So we do a lot of advocacy and utilize, you know, legal, legislative, and community-based tactics to achieve our policy goals.
And so I'm fairly new to the community and was surprised to find out that the Department of Justice was investigating the Suffolk County Police. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the DOJ was investigating up until December 2013, up until the end of last year, because for several years, Latino community members were being mistreated by their neighbors in Suffolk County. and the police, it was alleged, were failing to adequately protect them. There were numerous bias-based attacks against Latino residents in the early 2000s. People's homes were burned down. People were beaten up severely, had bottles thrown at them, pushed off bicycles, stuff like that. But in 2008, there was a very serious incident where a group of teens attacked an immigrant named Marcelo Lucero, who was living in Patchogue at the time. You know, to make a long story short, they beat him up and stabbed him, and he died. The teens who were arrested said that they were out, quote, beaner hopping, essentially targeting people that they thought to be undocumented immigrants and beating them up and robbing them. After that incident, there was a cry from advocates and community members, including the NYCLU, for a change. The Latino community in Suffolk County felt unprotected. So advocates, including us and Latino Justice and a number of others, appealed to the Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division, to investigate, and that resulted in a four-year investigation of the, quote, indifference of the Suffolk County Police Department towards Latino community members.
And so what was the outcome at the end of 4 years? Have things been put in place to reform the policing?
So 4 years later, in December 2013, the investigation resulted in a memorandum of understanding between the police department and the DOJ. Essentially, this agreement requires that Suffolk County regularly report to the DOJ, that there be significant outreach to the Latino community and to advocates. And they've also created what's called community liaison officers in each precinct to handle community relations in that district. So hopefully these steps will serve to build trust between Suffolk residents and the police. And we're encouraged that the Suffolk County Police Department wants to build that trust and distance themselves from the previous administration where a lot of these incidents happened. It'll take a lot of work from the Suffolk County Police Department and from advocates and from community members to sort of remold that bond that hasn't existed in the past and build a trusting relationship.
Yeah, a lot of work and efforts by many organizations, as you said, including Latino Justice and the Civil Liberties Union. But can we go back to some incarceration issues? And Professor Klein, can you talk about what alternatives there are to incarceration and how we can reduce the 2.3 million number?
I think in recent years, states and counties have seen that they could save a great deal of money if they were to not imprison people, but rather to have individuals with all kinds of problems go to programs where they could get assistance. For example, I think the most common kind of alternative to incarceration is for people to live either in residence or out residence in a drug rehab program. So not only does it make it easier for that person to adjust back into society and not be labeled as a felon, but there's actually a great deal of money that's saved from not continuing to incarcerate people. But if I can just go back to something that Amol said a minute ago, if we look at the underfunding of defenders throughout this state and really throughout the country, the impact of that on incarceration is just very clear, because a lawyer who has too much time to really represent his or her client is going to very often just recommend to the client that they plead guilty. And a lot of people end up getting incarcerated, staying incarcerated, and pleading guilty because they don't regard themselves as having an option to fight the charges because the lawyer is saying you should just go ahead and take a plea of guilty. So the over-incarceration in this country is so closely tied in with the lack of adequate funding for the criminal justice system as a whole.
And so we had a show a little while back on problem-solving courts, and I'm wondering if you think that there have been enough success with the problem-solving courts to reduce incarceration rates.
Yes, and I think especially here in Suffolk County, our former Chief Justice, Judith Kaye, had as her hallmark the creation of these problem-solving courts. And they're just common sense. If someone has a mental health problem, and they've ended up facing the criminal justice system because of some crime that really was rooted in their mental disease, they should get help for their mental illness and not take up room inside of our jail. So we have now in New York a number of these problem-solving courts, drug courts and the mental health courts being the most prominent of those.
So,
and I must say that our example in New York really has been a model for many other jurisdictions throughout the country to use problem-solving courts as well.
And are there problem-solving courts at the federal level, or are these all state phenomena?
Virtually all of them are at the state level and not at the federal level.
So maybe that's another contributing factor as to why the, although there's been an increase, it's more at the federal level and a decrease somewhat at the state levels. The states maybe are being more innovative.
And I think the U.S. Attorney General now, Eric Holder, has started to see that on the federal level, too many people were being incarcerated for minor drug possession crimes, and he's taking some steps to ameliorate those conditions.
Well, I want to thank you, Professor Richard Klein and Amal Sinha. It was really a pleasure to have both of you on the show. And thank you out there for listening. On the Docket airs every Sunday at 4:30 on Long Island News 103.9. So until next Sunday, this is Torah Law Dean Patricia Salkin. Have a great week.